Hello, thank you for being with us in the New Life Educational Series with Dr. Michael Lehman. Hello, Dr. Lehman. Hello. Hello, Nitza Mazuz. Hello. And we're inviting you to come on a journey with us. We're taking a journey with Rav Lehman each time in the areas of our life and how we develop relationships with people around us, how to create newer and better relationships that infuse us with happiness, warmth, concern, a feeling that life of new connections, the code word is the new life. And today we want to focus on what's happening in the home, in the family. And we're coming from a place that where if we learn as parents and as mature people and our children as well at different ages, small teens, doesn't matter what ages, even with our grandparents, this whole unit that's called the family unit, if we learn to create a new quality in how we connect with others, then we'll be able to profit from that in all areas of our life. And then all our connections, even outside the unit, will go up a level. And when we all enhance our ability to connect with others, we'll suddenly discover that we created for ourselves a better life, a new life. That's what we want to do. Be with us. I even suggest taking notes. So you'll be able to exercise these things at home, and you'll be able to see if it works or not. You can check for yourself. Our focus today, one of the subjects that bothers parents the most in the family unit, is the area of boundaries. How should we relate to this whole issue of setting boundaries? Nitza, get us into it. So part of our important role as parents is to set boundaries for children. The most basic thing in creating boundaries means to say to the child when he needs to go to sleep, what he needs to eat, all those things. Of course, it's according to their age, but of course, the entire system of laws and the limitations we give our kids, it's some step, we call it a step that's it's a loving place. It comes from a place of love that we want to limit our children so that it will allow them to develop and grow in the best possible way. It maintains their health, etc. But this subject of boundaries and setting them properly is really one of the subjects that really confuses parents. Many times there's a feeling that if I limit my kid, maybe I don't love him enough or I'm too tough. And here the difficulty begins. So the first question is, how do you see in your approach, how do you see setting boundaries and how do we do it properly? It's a problem. It's a big problem. Because we need the child to receive these boundaries that he'll agree with them in his inner, from a place of inner agreement. It doesn't come to him because that's what he's used to. And he sees it's correct, but rather it's some kind of condition that they put before him, a condition that he has to carry out. He has to carry it out in a constant manner, always by pressuring himself against his will. Because we want to find each time an attitude, an approach that each thing a child does at the end of the day, he doesn't do it out of fear, not out of pressure, but rather because of his desire and agreement from his side. So how can we bring himself to a decision like this, that he himself is taking upon himself that same boundary that we want to preach to him in such a manner that we won't even speak about it, but rather he himself would suddenly carry it out. That's the ideal situation. These things can come, if not through pressure from the parent side, then only through the environment, as an example. There's nothing else except that. Either in the army they force people, or at home they force people, soldiers, or receiving an example from the environment. That obligates a person. He's not capable of standing up to it. He can't. If the environment behaves in such a manner and demands in such a manner, then the child or the big person, it doesn't matter, he goes after the environment. Now the question is, where do we get such an environment from? That they'll want to carry out these things, and the child will also. At my house, it was very simple. I put my son into karate. When he was quite big, at the age of 11 or 12, he wasn't in an environment that really supported that. I took him, I said I have to take him for lessons, and then they let me take him. I took him to karate, but the coach said to him, at 9 o'clock in the evening, you have to go to sleep, something like that. And then for him, it was the Holy Grail. He wanted to succeed, and he carried it out. It's better if it doesn't come from the parent. It can be a parent, but ideally an authority, a positive authority in his life, and vital for that child. That's it. That's very important. That he'll see in that achievements. By them saying that to him, someone who's bigger than him, someone who he respects, that he said that and maybe does that also himself, and then he can carry it out without any inner struggle. But let's say that's a situation where a parent expects another framework to set the boundaries. How do I, as a parent, make the child's boundaries? Why does the parent have to do it himself? Because of his pride? No. Out of a desire to look after the kid, maintain him. So there's a need to find, not frameworks, foreign sources of influence on the kid that will be great in his eyes, and then he'll be able to maintain them, what they say to him. So let's say those frameworks can really be sports frameworks. I see kids play football, etc. So the coach gives them some direction and they take it as holy. But I'm looking at younger kids that don't go to these frameworks. A 2 or 3 year old has to have those limits. He needs to know when he's eating, when he's sleeping, when he's rested, when I'm not letting him watch TV. He needs to take an exam from his big brother or from his neighbor who's jealous of him. He needs to see that he's big, he's strong, important in some manner. A child who's slightly bigger than him, and they always look at them like something special. Where us parents were like furniture for them, and children that are slightly bigger for them, it's an example. We need to find such a thing. But this subject is so wide It has to be an environment. That's what I want to say. In any, it's not a matter of what's allowed and what's not allowed. It touches everything. We need to organize such an environment, an activity. It doesn't matter what, but it has to be only from the environment. Otherwise, it won't hold. Why won't it hold, actually? Because a person is nurtured from his environment and he's influenced by his environment. He looks at the people that are slight like him or slightly older than him and he takes an example from them. He can't take an example from people who are 5 years older than him. For him, that's a completely different world. And smaller than him, he disregards them. It's natural. It's the natural power in us, otherwise we won't grow up. You can't say that you're jealous. You can say you're jealous of someone that's a year, two, 3 years older than you, but beyond that, you can't grasp. So I need, as a parent, to bring my child to have the right impression from those kids, but those kids already have to be in the correct society. They need to be organized. If I want to educate my child, I don't have any choice. I have to check where they are, what framework they're in. I have to look after the framework. And I in my house can organize anything. Do what you want. Invite kids over, bring them each time pizza, something. But the main thing is for them to organize, that there'll be someone there, some instructor on the side, and to make a correct framework out of them so your son will enjoy it. And of course, he won't go in a way that he'll fail. But you don't have any chance of educating him otherwise. His mother is a very weird element. He won't listen to you. He won't want to hear. Maybe he'll carry it out because he has no choice. He'll resist it with all his strength. Even if we started a process of studying, we'll start a process of studying in this circle in the family. In the family, it's possible. You have to create a framework. Let's say things that are more difficult, going to sleep on time, etc. The strongest factor are the friends, but the friends can also influence him. Let him play from the morning till the evening. You let him be on the internet, the game. I'm not just saying any friends that you take from outside, but we're talking about those that we've started working with them and organizing them. Otherwise, it's not called an environment. An environment, I'm talking about a good environment. So I understand that there's two processes. There's a social process, and there's a process inside my family. If it's possible to do it with a family, fine. But there's things that are more successful for carrying out in the environment of friends. So you're actually saying the whole issue of setting boundaries, it's something it's easier for the environment to set the boundaries rather than you do it at home. It's more powerful. That's not very simple, but that's how we're built. Because a person always develops in a greater society, external society, and he's pulled after it. That's our nature. That really explains the situation right now, because it appears that our society is breaking out of... it's not the kids breaking out of... they're in some kind of framework, but when they start getting older, the teens have gone through every boundary, every framework. That's because we're not looking after a good environment for them. I have a question. And also, we don't want to recognize that they have evil inclination that has to be treated, that the environment has to answer each problem, each of these problems, this war with the evil inclination, not to destroy it, but to transform it to good. It's really art. Education is everything. If we know how to educate our kids, then we change the world with that. At least not in our generation. Then the next generation. Education is it's a central issue. That's why the integral education is the springboard for changing everything. Either we'll change things or we'll descend into God knows what. Therefore, here we need to pay attention. That shaping around each person has to surely have a good environment. Why do we have to make set boundaries for kids? Can't they grow up without boundaries? I'm just answering her question. So now I want to take a step back and ask about the issue of setting boundaries. It's as if part of a parent's functionality as of being a good parent is setting the right boundary so the child will grow like a flower and the child will grow as a monkey among monkeys. Like crossing the street alone, is he allowed to? He's not allowed. Somebody has to set the boundaries. Father has to explain to him, crossing the street alone is not allowed because you can get run over. That's just a little example of setting a boundary. In other words, life, apparently they gave me a role without asking me, in which I, as a parent, I'm obligated to set boundaries for the child to allow his correct and healthy development, correct? Yes. So that's a fact. Now I want to ask, why does a child, a little person who's developing into a human, why he's going to grow like a flower? That's what nature gave me in my hand as a parent. So why does this role of setting boundaries, is it necessary for the child to grow properly? Yes, but the question is, what is setting boundaries? I'm standing on the street and trying to cross it. I'm not looking if the light is red or orange. I'm looking if there's cars or there's not cars. And if there's not cars, I'm running. And I, the parent, as an adult, what can stop me from only crossing on green if I have a child with me? If I'm walking with a child, I try to give an example. And also, if you see there's no cars and everything's open and safe, you cross. In other words, we are always standing with our evil inclination, with our urges. We can only, external forces can stop us and give us an example and maintain us and allow us to maintain the laws of society, that what society respects, I need to respect. It's only if there's the opinion around me. If there's no opinion around me, then I'll escape. I'll do whatever I feel like doing. Yes, that's it. Therefore, I say we can't check inside that a child will do this or that. He has evil inclination. He won't want to. He'll kick all the borders, the frameworks. And we will ourselves also. We need to reach a situation that what I do, it doesn't matter what it is. No matter what I do, I always feel myself that I'm in society and that I have to carry out the laws of society. And that if I carry them out, I feel good. And if I don't carry them out, I feel bad because I'm a bad element for society and myself as well. That is one and the same thing it's becoming for me. Only on this condition will I never cross the street except with the green light. Is it possible to discern? From what you explained, I understood there's a discern between setting physical boundaries and setting social boundaries. It's the same thing. Really? Yes. What difference does it make? Physical means like crossing the street. whether you go to sleep at 9 o'clock, or is it physical or social? Because everyone brainwashed me, so I go to sleep with everyone. That's how it is. If it will be according to physics, what's obligating me? I want to watch a nice movie. I want to talk on the phone with my friends. So I should charge you if you're my child. Who are you, Daddy? I don't even see you. If you don't see me, then apparently since you were young, I didn't set boundaries for you. Now I'm growing up. I'm starting more and more not to pay attention to you. That's the nature that we disconnect from our parents until they completely leave the home, our kids. You can beat me up. I'll go to the police. You know how it is. Hang on, you're confusing me that you brought a... I'm talking about a little kid. I'm not talking about teens. He doesn't want to go to sleep. He wants to continue talking. If I don't tell him to stop, he'll never stop, right? I did otherwise. I took my grandchild. He wanted to sleep at a friend's house. That's a good example. My child every day wants to sleep at a friend's house. I said, stop. There's days that you can, there's days that you can. There's days where there's vacation. When it's not vacation, you can't sleep at a friend's house. Friday night, you can't sleep at a friend's house. That's what I said in my house, and I maintained them. And he hates his father. He can hate them, but without boundaries. But why should it come from you and not in the correct and good manner? So what's the correct manner? That's what we're trying to learn. I brought him to a friend, and this friend goes to sleep early. And they both went to sleep early. He walked around a bit, he hung around a bit, and then he went to sleep. And then a little bit more, and a little bit more, and then he went to sleep easily. Great. A great example how to set a boundary of when to go to sleep. What about the number of times he'll sleep at a friend's house? There you can't do it. I talk with the mother there. I talked with the father. That's what we had in our house as well. And they said to him, no, today we can't. Today we're going somewhere, maybe in a couple of days. And twice a week you can. Great. That's called that you set boundaries and you gave proof. You said, you can't. And I didn't do it. The other parents did it. So for the child, someone big made a boundary and said, you can't do it tomorrow. My father was great. Me as a father. You want to sleep at him? Great. You want to do what you want? Great. I'm just like you. I'm along with you. I'm whatever you want. And then we got a condition from outside that's not allowing us for you to sleep there. And today, truly, he doesn't go to sleep at him at all. Sometimes, once in a while. With kids, it has to balance out. At the beginning, there's a big excitement, and then it becomes a habit, and then it gets less important, etc. According to his spirit, meaning your aspiration is not to be the bad cop. You said, I'm your friend, I'm nice, I'm generous. As far as I'm concerned, 300 days a week, you can go sleep there. Let's see if they agree. And then the mother says, listen, you were here yesterday, so maybe next week we'll agree. Yes. So what am I learning from this little lesson? That I, in order to maintain the right connection with my child, I always have to aspire to appear in his eyes as a friend, that I would be very happy to give you everything without any boundary, anything in life. And then he feels I'm with him. But what? The life is forcing us, and therefore setting boundaries. If there's no choice... Only if there's no choice, you suggest to him not to do it, not to do this or that, then he will hear you. Because he will know that usually you're his friend. So in other words, first you acquired his trust, but only in things that are vital. that I don't identify how I can turn it around. And in a very sneaky way, I need to turn it around. Suddenly it breaks or something's not working. Someone doesn't agree. I myself am not the bad element for him. Why is it important in this approach? I'm trying to understand the rationale. Why is it so significant not to express to the child? When kids say the mother's mean, it means they doesn't like their mother. It's this little ego understands that a parent doesn't need to always be a slave for him. What does he give birth to him for? To use him? Kids understand that parents for them are, they're there for them. For them. That's how it is according to the upper root, and that's how it is in our life as well. If I ask for my parents for something, they have to supply it to me. So you're getting out of it. You said kids that say the mummy's mean, they don't love her. I'm not trying to get out of something, I'm trying to be a smart parent. That's it. A smart parent sees that you always say yes. A smart that he arranges for the kid such situations that he'll learn how to behave properly. Now you brought the role. He has to create external roles through which kids will learn the boundaries, just like in a boundary. It's a lot of work, actually, because the parent has to think how they educate. Like, for example, in this situation, that's the wisdom of being a parent. It's not easy. It's as if, let's say, the mother and father, those upper ones, they know their child's nature, and they're making a special setup to turn things around, and they want to get them through such places so that they'll be able to correct themselves. They take them to zone. And therefore, we have to take from that an example. And we need to do it in a sneaky way. On the one hand, we need to get energy from them. And next to the dining room and the... Daddy doesn't allow it, so let's go to Mommy. Mommy allows it. Mommy and Daddy have to be all the time together, and they manage and turn the kids around. There's really an approach like that that says two parents have to agree to the same. It's really planning these situations, those same situations. Otherwise, it doesn't work. That's called the integral education. There's no choice. We have to learn with things that in our world there's no example for it. And this is how we gradually reach an upper wisdom. Are there certain things that I as a parent need to know? How to organize? You threw a bomb into here now, as far as I'm concerned. You said we need to arrange all sorts of situations so that kids will learn. If you love your children, it obligates you to be connected to your neighbors, to your teachers. And it obligates you to be in friendship with your friends and be in connection and be in union with them. And you can be even more advanced. And then you'll know for sure how to treat your kids. Otherwise, it won't work. There has to be a round society. A lot of times when we set boundaries, there's the subject of punishments. Punishment can only be only if the society puts him down. Being ashamed is the only attribute that we have, our basic attribute, that if we play with it, we'll be able to correct men. Explain this to me. How do we play with shame in such a way? Once upon a time, we didn't have to play with shame, because a person was always in a group of people or in a village where everyone saw everything. And then automatically, he was always working with his shame, how to appear in the eyes of others, according to what's accepted. Today we have a problem. We are... Our boundaries and norms are beneath every possible standard, etc. But still, we have the shame, each and every one of us, and each and every one of us still wants to, is obligated to, from the side of his nature, to appear great in the eyes of the society. Smarter, stronger, more stubborn, more criminal, more of a bully. It doesn't matter with what. The main thing is more. If not the entire society, then his... To make a long story short, he has to stand out. And this is how he maintains his eye. Therefore, we need to identify these things in each and every person. And the society has to actually play with each and every one of us, that if not, you'll feel shame. And then a person will do everything to prevent it. That will maintain him for sure. It's in nature in such a manner that it won't take up any of his strength. If I know that I behave like this and like this, I'll be so ashamed, I won't be able to do it ever. The shame is what maintains us at every level that the society determines, that that below that is shame and above that is respect. Respect we can give up a little bit. It depends on the health and our power and how much we invest, etc. But shame, it's a big problem. Therefore, with kids, we need to play. And there's a lot to learn here. Can you give me an example in the family for using shame as a tool? Again, if we do workshops and we see, we need to do it very gently, otherwise we can break the kid. It sounds like a very cruel tool inside the house. I'm afraid I'll damage the child. If you're knowledgeable, then you'll know what to do. But you talked about setting boundaries, yes? So here the shame, but now you've given me nuclear energy. You've given me a means for creating boundaries. I don't know what to do with it. It sounds so dangerous. If I give him too much shame, I'm burning him, I think. That's correct. Especially if it's a child, it's a million times more. If you break his confidence, that's why I'm asking, so how do I use the tool? I understood the principle, but how do I use it? How do I use it correctly? How do I use it gently? I can't explain it in a manner that it will be truly ready for use. You have to learn it. We'll open it up. Maybe we'll open up a discussion about shame in itself. We'll talk about it, even if you want the next discussion. So how should we do it correctly? Let's go back to the shame. We were talking about punishment. We were talking about setting boundaries and punishment. First of all, you said it's not acceptable. There's no such thing as punishment. You're saying it's not acceptable. The shame is the punishment, either respect or shame. We want to raise a person. A person is made up of these two inclinations, for shame, meaning escaping from shame and reaching respect. Can I give an example from my life as a child? I remember girls, it's really a problem. My parents always gave me lots of space, but they always said to me, we really, really depend on you. And it's clear to us that you'll come back on time. So as a young girl, I would go out and I would know that there's no situation that I'd be late because there was no way that I wanted to disappoint them. I always wanted to continue to acquire their respect toward me. Is this an example for the correct use? Let's say it could be, but if it depends on the previous education and the relations, it's not just an example in itself. If I say to a child, I rely on you, it has to be something in the whole thing of relations. You mean I took the place of shame and I tried to take it to a place of not disappointing? It was like smaller. Shame is a very, very big. So what do we do with the punishment? There's no punishment. The punishment is that he'll feel that he can get into shame. And in the eyes of the environment, in the home, it's a big problem. You can also shape it. But he will be ashamed in the eyes of the environment, the family, but toward the wider environment. Of course, look what's happening in classes and schools. Look at the wars. Look at the relationships. Look at the fire there. It's all pride that brings, on the one hand, it's all ego, that it either goes to ego or shame. And if we create an environment that tells him this behavior, you're called normal, you don't have anything to be ashamed of, and more than that, then you'll have what to be proud of. And that's how you solve the problem. Can you give me a picture where a parent has to give his child a punishment for something? A situation that is suitable for giving a punishment? And give me the scenario, how to do it correctly? No. There's no picture. In the integral education, the punishment he has to feel inside, that he's so embarrassed from the shame. You went to the second stage, how he needs to feel. Give me a picture of something that is, according to this integral norm, is not okay. A deed that the child did, that he didn't match the integral criteria of an integral family. Give me a picture like that where I'll see he did something wrong, and then explain to me how you deal with it. Let's start with what's not okay. Is there a picture that, give me something from life, something that has to do with the relations in the family? The integral education is about relations. So let's say, I'll give you an example. I see that you're not. We divided each person received a bit of money. I was supposed to bring petrozelia from the market. Instead of that, I went to play football with my friends, and the petrozelia came home dirty and everything, but I was happy, everything was fine. And you're completely black. It's an everyday example. He came home all filthy. What do you do? I'm asking you. With my pen, there's no punishment. I'm scared. I'm waiting here with the pen. First of all, you do nothing. I'm waiting to hear something new. But what do you think? How can you educate him? What can you do? First of all, I'm furious. As a parent, of course. Okay, so blow up. Now I'm asking, how do you teach him that he did? I'm starting to get hot. The everyday life has come to the studio. How do you plan now reality that he'll feel such a great shame that he'll never forget having this obligation to the family, and he'll feel that it's toward the family? And he'll truly, that he really cheated everyone. He did it in that he betrayed everyone and in the worst possible way. How do they need to relate to him? How can they give him this feeling in a manner that it's not coming from them, but rather it's coming and it's awakening in him? And then he goes and he eats himself. He's eating himself up. Is it a question? I think that, for example, I would, maybe it's a game. I remember my father gave me an exercise like this, that I would also forget. I once did something. I'm even ashamed to say what I did now. And afterward, I sat and I was doing my homework in the living room or something, and I felt that it wasn't good. And he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. But he just went around the table and said, a shame. That's it. And it was really, really insulting. If he had screamed at me or hit me, but he said, you know, just a shame. That it's a disgrace, sorry. That's what he said. It was really felt very strongly. And now the question comes, how can we bring that each time? It depends on whether it's a girl or a boy, what age, the relations. But you need to create a situation like that, that he, either through a hint, kids absorb things quickly, they forget things and they don't pay attention. He has to feel it. What I was thinking when you talked about it, that you, how to get conveyed to him, let's say he forgot. What happened is that he forgot. He forgot his family. It's not really the Petrozilia. You can create a situation where the family is pretending that they also forget something toward him. Let's say he asked for something, like to give him the same situation. No, 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 no. That's like hitting him. It's the same thing like hitting him. It's not like holding up a mirror. You forgot us, so we forgot you. So you can't cook without that Petrozilia anything. So today we're not eating anything. No, that's not good. He has to understand it inside, that it only belongs to him and it's from him and it doesn't come from the family or anyone else. That's the best, that's the ideal situation. But how do we cause him to feel that? Because I'll tell you, because it's from the, if it's from the family, then he'll get mad at everyone. This protective force will cause him to be precisely the opposite. Oh, you're doing... He'll say, he'll hate them because he'll feel that they're the source of the bad feeling. He has to feel that the source of the bad feeling is inside him. So now the question that remains, how do you cause him to feel bad about what he did? There's your homework. We'll think about it. I want to give you an example. Do we have time? Yes. Unfortunately, I live in the city on the fourth floor, and with the not-so-great security situation in the city, I always make sure the kids know that the door has to always be locked. And if they're in the house and somebody knocks on the door, until they see, they're not allowed to open the door for anyone, but if it's me, they have to open for me. It's only after they looked through the hole and they identify me. They have to ask who it is, look through the hole. If the light is off, they have to look, they have to open the light in the hallway. If it's the father, if it's the mother, then they can open the door. That's the procedures in the house, security procedures. So I come home. The kids are in the home. I knock on the door. They say, who is it? I say, it's daddy. According to the procedure, they're supposed to get up on a stool and look to make sure it's really me and then open the door. Now, if the opening is too fast, I know they skipped a few stages in the procedure. If it happened and they skipped a few stages, the door opens, they're hugging me. I'm like, hang on, did you look through the hole? They're like, no. They say, because we know your voice. We don't want to go through the whole procedure. So I say, okay, let's do it again. Close the door. Then they go inside. They close the door. They wait. I wait outside, and then we do the whole procedure according to how I wanted to from beginning. We run the movie back. Who is it? Father. They turn the light on in the hallway. They look in the hole, etc. Now, do they still open the door and want to hug you? I think so. I'm smiling to myself because I'm not, I define something that for sure it's for their good. There were all kinds of crazy people in the area. For sure, it's for their own good. It's my obligation to do it. So it has all the elements that we spoke about today. There's a definition of a way they should behave that's for their own good. I explained it to them dozens of times, and everyone understands. There's the boundaries. They broke the boundaries because they didn't carry out the procedure. And I don't get fed up. I do it again and again every evening. But it's getting better. If I look at statistics, like in analytics, if I look at analytics, it's getting better. My question is, if according to your model, if it's never allowed, it's okay. It's okay what you're doing. I'm okay, people. We're carrying on with this. Now, why did I bring this example? So what's good and what's not good? Because I've lost what's good and what's not good. I'm afraid not to. You said never, ever to punish them. They need to feel inside. God forbid someone should come into my house. Listen. Here you're talking about some external force that's threatening, from which you are protecting as a big person. You're going to do some protective things. And you as well, toward that same element, that threat, you behave in the same manner, and therefore you're teaching them how to behave in the same manner. That's like toward the upper force. That you're praying, and the kids see me, what, he's so small, he's praying to the upper force. What's happening to him? They don't think like that. What about non-religious kids? Still, there's something above us. There is. There's the blows of nature, God forbid war, some government that say, there's things like that, that there's no choice. The same thing with that, robbers, etc. So here you're fine, because it's not you dictating to them, but rather you're explaining to them, in our city there's situations like this. That's something else. In other words, and you're in the same situation with them. It's not that you're saying to them, you do. You're saying, together we're doing this because the element is above us. It's stronger than us. So now it's clear. There's a division between things that are external and things that are truly boundaries that I want to make in my house. Is there a difference between the mother's role and the father's role in setting boundaries? They need to always be together. for kids, it's not good to see mother and father separate. It has to be one thing. To the extent that they grow up, then it's a little bit less mother, and it's more the two of them. If they're small, then of course it's the mother. There's no question. But actually, the father always has to be in the background, behind the mother or next to her. And in say there's a difference of opinion on a certain subject that has to do with setting boundaries. I can give an example. I have tons of examples from my house. The children are fighting between them. They're hitting each other. One approach says, let them organize themselves by themselves. The other approach is, what does that mean? In a second, they're going to kill each other. I have to stop this right away. What is the subject? Differences of opinions and how to relate to it. What do I do now? I'm learning this course, how to be an integral parent. The kids are fighting. I say to you, first of all, laughing. First of all, put them in front of the other and say, each one give the other 5 blows. Why? Just like that? Not with excitement, but after half an hour that you distance them. First of all, I distance them. Let them cool down. So I should intervene. I'm allowed to intervene. But I'm really asking, try an exercise like this. Now bring them back to each other. Say each one, half an hour after we stop them, each one give the other 5 blows. About half an hour. Catch them when they're playing together, when they went through to the next situation. Now you each have to give the other 5 blows. What do I want to achieve with that? I'm allowing you. You wanted to hit yourselves before. Now do it now. What's the problem? How can I tell that to him? Hit him. You have to teach them. You have to teach them what it means to want to give hit someone and what it means to hit someone. That there's a big difference. I want to hit someone, and you have to give them. You have to allow them to feel how I do it from an inner urge, and how I do it out of a calculated desire. I don't know. I'm not reading you. You ask them, why can't you hit each other now? Learn from them what they say to you. Now we're playing, we're friends, but what was before? What was so bad before? Teach them that it's possible that it's possible not to be under inner urges. That they should make fun of themselves. That now they can't hit each other. They can't. Because while they're hitting each other, you'll tell them to hug each other. It's impossible. But now it's the opposite situation. You're together, you're friends, hate each other. This is giving them perceptions. What it means to be under the inner urge and to do acts without their brains. And now do it according to your brains. And then what happens to them? I'm trying to imagine it. It imagines like something they'll make fun of. It even makes you like ashamed. They learn. They learn that there's situations like this and there's situations like that. But this situation comes at once. For a child, the fact that it happened an hour ago, that they hit each other, and now For them, it's two worlds. Now they're friends, they're buddies. They forgot it. It's not like us that we can not forget something for years. For them, to bring these two situations to one, now you're hugging each other, now give a hit each other. For them, they don't understand it. How is it possible? And this is what we need to teach them. So now you gave me a solution for the issue of fights between brothers. But the original question was the difference of opinions. Let's say he has a certain opinion about a certain subject. For example, to intervene when they're fighting, and I say don't intervene. Between the difference of opinion between the parents. They're fighting in the room. She says, according to what I understood, we shouldn't intervene. Let them get organized. Let them figure it out. Well, let them figure it out. They're going to kill each other. And if possible, to give them a little punishment so they'll remember it. So here's an example. There's two different approaches. What do we do? What do we have to do? How do we get out of it? In your case, I don't know. In somebody else's case, you need to turn this situation off somehow and verify it with your teacher. If one thinks like that and the other thinks like that and they can't reach, you don't have some instruction book for the integral education at home that answers that. No. If you don't have, then I don't know. So I'm asking you live. Let's say if I could call you. Let's say we're coming to the course and we're coming back to the course and telling you we have a situation like this. The two kids are fighting in the room. But don't focus on the fighting. It's just an example. It could be 1,000 examples. Go into the room and start next to them fighting. Why? Because. Why? Give them an example. A bad example, it's fine. They'll stop right away and they'll look at you. And you'll continue fighting. And they'll really be ashamed what's happening. Then you'll start explaining to them. In general, what I'm starting to understand from this approach is that actually my approach and his approach are apparently not wrong. There's a completely new approach that's not that and not this. It's something else altogether. That's what I'm starting to. I can't give solutions for each and every situation. That's clear. We're not looking for a solution for each situation. But the principle, how to deal with differences of opinion between the parents, those same differences of opinion, start verifying them and in this war between you in front of the kids. Now, give them, the mother says, let them hit each other, let them not, and start fighting, but do it really strong. Then you sit down in a family workshop and discuss it. That's interesting. Okay, our time is up. I would like to continue. You can mix them, bring them into the decision, make them big. They should be part of everything. That's called education. So our subject in this discussion was setting boundaries. Why do we need boundaries? How do we make boundaries correctly? We talked about punishments. How would you like to summarize this main insight? Never, except for emergency situations. Extraordinary situations, we never set boundaries ourselves so they won't feel that we're police, that we're guards, that we're some judges or something, but only friends, great friends, big friends. that we're respected in their eyes. And we don't do anything in a direct manner against their ego. Otherwise, they'll hate us. Maybe they'll hide it or whatever. We only cause them to learn through all kinds of sources, external sources, foreign sources. And in these foreign sources that warn them from outside, don't do this, along with them, we're together as friends against these external forces. You see, there's no choice. We need to do this. I'm with you. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. A very fascinating lesson. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, Nitza. I'm with you. We're with you. The New Life. All the best.